facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the show. It is Thursday, June 17th. So happy to be with you. 1-888-914-9149. You know, Father's Day is coming up this Sunday, so get your gifts ready, get your cards ready. You know what? Dads are taking a beating in today's culture. We keep hearing about dad music, dad dancing, dad bods, dad jokes, and I'm guilty on all counts. So we need to reclaim, though, the prefix dad. You know, it can't just be a prefix, a preview to a joke of some sort. It's got to stop being a derogatory connotation. This Father's Day, we need to make that change. And I want your take on this. What can we do to reclaim true fatherhood in the culture where it's really being pilloried, it's really being made a caricature, a joke, the butt of a joke? It has nothing to do with the dad bod, but and speaking of dad jokes, I shamelessly promote them. I encourage them. I love them. So I want to hear also, what is your favorite dad joke? I think when we reclaim fatherhood, we do not want to get rid of dad jokes. That's for sure. Or dad dancing, because it's fun to do dad dancing. It's fun to. Everybody can do it because it's really bad. So you don't have to be good to do dad dancing. In fact, you could be a really bad dancer and be a good dad dancer. So you can't lose. You really can't lose. But writing in the Evening Standard, this is in the UK. Ed Cumming has a great piece that came out today about this whole culture, the problem with derogatory views on fatherhood exemplified by the dad music, dad dancing, dad bods, dad joke type culture that we're in. 1-888-914-9149. Once again, is that number to call if you want to talk about this. You can also email me, cale@relevantradio.com, cale@relevantradio.com. And there's also two Twitter accounts that you need to know about. My personal account, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the Cale Clark Show account, at Cale Clark Show. We were very creative with that name. We decided to play it straight, keep it simple, and it works for us. So you can check those accounts too. And you can even actually tweet your favorite dad joke at us at the show account or at my personal account. Check it out. We'll read them on air if they're any good. And so Ed Cumming, writing today in preparation for Father's Day in the Evening Standard in the UK, he talks about a trip that he made with his family, his wife and his very young daughter, to Cornwall. And they were walking down a lane, and there was a field of sheep on either side. One on the left, one on the right. Fields of sheep. And he was struck by kind of a dad thought. He turned to his wife, and he imagined he had a mischievous gleam in his eye, and he said, "Here I am, stuck in the middle with ewes." Get it? With ewes, sheep. There's a sheep pen on one side, another sheep field on the other side. Stuck in the middle with ewes. Anyway, so his wife apparently rolled her eyes at that joke and said, "See, that's what I'm talking about. Dad jokes. Dad jokes." And he said, "Hang on here. I've always made puns like this. If anything, I've only been a father," he said, "for 14 months, but I've been a son for 32 years before that." So really, you should be saying that this was a son joke, not a dad joke. Now, you may not like the style, you may not like my puns, and if so, get prepared for a very difficult marriage. You might need some counseling. But why did you have to bring paternity into it? Why did it have to be considered a dad joke? And her dad joke moniker needed a bit of work too, because he said every time he told a joke, it felt like he was being labeled as, "Oh, that's another dad joke." Just like a plane automatically becomes Air Force One as soon as the president steps into it. Any joke that you tell, if you're a father, automatically becomes a dad joke. And that's not fair. And that's not fair to the dad community. So he was trying to explain this to her, and she just started rolling her eyes again. And so Ed Cumming says that ever since he became a dad, he started noticing that term more and more and more. And sometimes you only notice things when you're living in it. And he's also noticed that whenever this term dad is mentioned, it's only rarely used as a compliment, as a positive. And it's hard to know sometimes what this is all about. He started thinking about his daughter And of course, one of the reasons why dads are called dads is because of baby speak. And his little 14-month-old daughter started to make dada noises, and he's not sure what they mean sometimes. Sometimes she's just announcing she needs a diaper change. Sometimes she says dada when she's spotted something new and something very exciting. Oh, look at this, dada. So dada is kind of a versatile word in her child's mind. So dada can be loaded with many different types of meanings. It can mean I'm hungry. It can mean I'm angry. It can mean, from a child's point of view, I'm curious. I like this. And he also says, when my daughter calls me dada, I like to think that she's expressing admiration and respect for my office as dad. However, that's not always the case. Because he says in every other area of his life, he's noticed a lack of respect afforded to him as a dad. The music he likes to listen to has become dad rock. What kind of music is this? Basically, guitar-heavy songs that his wife doesn't like. What used to be just a difference in musical taste, now, oh no, that's horrible because it's dad music. Well, hang on here. What's wrong with Boston? What's wrong with Toto? Bands like that. You know, it's not like everything that's not Beyonce is bad music, but his wife really disagrees with that take. So he actually looked up this music track listing on Spotify called Now That's What I Call Dad Rock. And he was kind of shocked that some of the bands that were included as dad rock are really not that old. Bastille, the 1975, Blink 182. And he says, may we all live long enough to see the music of our teens become dad rock. Dad dancing, of course. We mentioned this off the top. The technical definition of dad dancing is the arrhythmic flailing of a man who is no longer looking to attract a mate. I like that. It just doesn't matter anymore. Dad clothes. What are dad clothes? They're clothes that are sensible and loose fitting. Some more stuff he says about this. Dad shoes. Chunky, uncomfortable cross trainers. Now, they've actually become kind of a fad lately because beautiful, thin young people are really fond of appropriating some of these items, like dad clothes, dad shoes, and when they wear them, they're cool. But when dad wears them, they're kind of fuddy-duddy. What's a dad car? Has good fuel economy, good trunk space. And he says that the one time when he hears dad, with even a little hint of admiration, comes when he is told that if he loses a bit more weight, just a little bit more weight, he might have a dad bod. Now that is an insult. Let me tell you, that's a major league insult. If you lose just a little bit of weight, you'll have a dad bod, which is rotund, somewhat out of shape. And so, now, it's funny because Ed Cummings says that in the article, few people who are fathers, who are actually fathers, who do have kids, would ever object to being called dad. You'd rather be called, 10 times out of 10, you'd rather your kids call you dad instead of father. Father seems very stiff. It seems very formal. He says it has an Old Testament gravity that comes with it. And that's really at odds with how most parents would see themselves in the year 2021. He says, there's a reason the prayer doesn't begin, our dad who art in heaven. It's our father. And so, but nobody actually calls their own father, father. I don't think so, unless you're watching an old period drama or something like that. He says the only time he ever calls his dad father is when he's filling out official forms, when he's talking about him on government forms. So where did this term dad come from? As we prepare for Father's Day, because we want to get a really solid Catholic take on what fatherhood actually should be, not the caricatures of the culture, not the put downs of the culture. Where did this term dad actually come from? Well, as far as we can see, there's some cases of the word dad in the English language as far back as the year 1500, so it goes back a little ways, but in modern times, the word dad really comes from the United States. It's an American thing. And apparently there's this thing called, I've never seen this, called Google Ngram. Have you ever seen this, Lucas?
I cannot say that I've ever seen that. No.
Google Ngram, which apparently logs the frequency of words and phrases in books over the years. That's kind of cool. It can figure out how often words and phrases are used. So Google Ngram has charted a sharp rise in the term dad in American English starting from the 1970s onwards. And then the British, on the other side of the pond, they start picking up the trend. And it starts for them a little bit later, but it's also become pretty popular in the UK as well. So the word father technically means he who begets a child. But nobody really knows where the word dad came from. It doesn't have a very obvious etymology. Kids used to call their fathers papa, little kids, in the 19th century. And now they call them dada. And really, it's because babies make noises like that. I mean, they say papa, dada. It sounds like you're saying dada. That's what I am. I'm dada. So that could be where it comes from, baby talk. But the word father, obviously, culturally, is a very different term than dad. A father, conjures up images of responsibility, being an upstanding citizen, authoritative, maybe a little bit aloof, maybe a little bit stern, but a very respectable member of society, not a fool. But in our culture, and Ned Cumming writes this, a dad is a softer and more cuddly specimen, lovable perhaps, but never mistaken for God. And he talks about the example of Peppa Pig. And if you have kids, you've probably seen the cartoon Peppa Pig. And the patriarch of the Peppa Pig cartoon is Daddy Pig. And he's kind of a lazy, forgetful figure with a very big tummy. He's too fat to get into Peppa's treehouse, and Peppa is his daughter. He's terrible at DIY projects, do-it-yourself projects. And here's a little clip of what Daddy Pig sounds like on Peppa Pig.
Peppa Pig. Oh, Daddy Pig.
Hey, that's it. So that's what he sounds like, Daddy Pig. And he's kind of a lovable character, but maybe not somebody that can be respected. Now, compare that to Mummy Pig. In the cartoon, Mommy Pig juggles impeccable mothering with a very successful career of her own. And so one of the things that my wife Trish talks about all the time, it just drives her crazy how on TV, whether it's cartoons, whether it's sitcoms, whether it's commercials, a father character like Daddy Pig kind of becomes the norm rather than the exception. Think about Homer Simpson. On The Simpsons, useless dads, they're all over the place on TV. And it drives my wife crazy the way that they're depicted in pop culture. And the reason is, the question we want to ask is, what is the reason for this? Why is this? And in the article, Ed Cumming makes a really interesting argument. He says that one reason that this trend of useless dads on television, coupled with very competent and successful mothers, that's been a really popular trend. It's because it's where feminism coincides with capitalism, And so he says that one easy way to show women in a better light is to make the men around them look hopeless. One way to show women in a better light is to make the men around them hopeless. And he talks about his friend Matt, who works in advertising. Because why does this show up in commercials all the time? This idea of the goofy dad, the ne'er-do-well dad. Where does this come from? Well, this guy Matt, who works in advertising, he says commercials have to show that you need this particular product or this particular brand in your life. So the way that a lot of ads are constructed, they show an imperfect life. An imperfect family life. And what's the solution? It's this product that will solve your problem. Now, mothers are usually the gatekeepers. That is, they're the ones who decide how the money gets spent in the household budget. So you can't show moms as the problem. You can't show a mom being at fault in these commercials. So who becomes the fall guy? Dad. Dad is always the comic relief in these commercials. Dads become the duffers who don't understand anything. They need to be helped by their wily children. Oh, dad, let me show you how to log into this, whatever. Or their understanding and very successful wives. But Ed Cummings says, isn't this a very unhelpful view? Isn't this a very reductive view of dads? On one level, it kind of lets men off the hook domestically, as though really they don't know how to use washing machines. Well, that must be something that's wired onto the Y chromosome. And that actually puts more pressure on women, because a lot of women obviously are trying to fulfill two jobs. They're moms, and they also have their own careers in a lot of cases. So that's one problem with this. And then there's another problem. It kind of cuts the other way, too. There's another angle to this. Dr. Jeremy Davies, he's from the Fatherhood Institute. He says that this can actually cut both ways. There's a flip side to this, because if dads get a hard time in life, if dads look like they're having a hard time, that's probably because there are structural obstacles in their way. A lack of parental leave. Sometimes it's hard for dads to take parental leave when they have a child. And this can actually hurt the balance, if you will. And so expectations on fathers keep increasing. They're sometimes expected to be providers and caregivers, and they get a lot of bad press about not doing enough in terms of caregiving for their families or helping with the housework, when at the same time, they can't leave their work. They're tied to their work. So this is looking at the angle from the problem from another angle. I find that really fascinating. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. Joe is calling from Toronto. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Cale. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. What's your take on this?
Well, yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. You know, sometimes I watch those cartoons that my kids are watching too, right? The Peppa Pig thing drives me crazy. And then there are other ones out there, so it's not just isolated to the Peppa Pig. But yeah, usually whenever they portray the dad is sort of like, as you were explaining, kind of naive, was kind of a half-wit, sort of lazy.
Yeah.
And it's always like it's either the wife or the mother or the kids even kind of outsmart the father, and it kind of reinforces in some cases the kids that the father sometimes doesn't know what on earth they're talking about, and it has to be really checked early, right? I mean, like kind of like that whole thing where you were describing, where fathers are supposed to be the servant leader, the protectors, providers, and even the friends of their children. It's almost like with the societal pressure gives a lot of people reason to abdicate that or to sort of like let it go to the wayside, right? And so, yeah, I think you're 100% correct with that, right? The whole idea of self-sacrifice for the family and that noble ideal of like squeezing, like the father squeezing themselves out of self-sacrifice for family, out of love, out of duty, and all that, it's kind of gone. I don't know. That's sort of like what I was sort of watching in some of the programs that I've been watching with my kids, and sometimes I'll complain about it and say, you're not watching that today simply because I don't agree with it. And, you know, but never allow them to attack the authority and the rightful sort of place that a father has, because it has a direct relationship to the way they're going to approach God. Right. Especially because we as fathers are supposed to be the direct example of God as per the fourth commandment. Right. So anyway, that's sort of my take on it. But I'd love to have a conversation with
you. Yeah. I think that's a really interesting take, Joe, because just as we wouldn't want, you know, if we had sons, we wouldn't want our kids watching anything that would be derogatory of women or treating women as objects or anything like that. We want a very biblical view of womanhood as well and how a man should treat a woman. We don't want our kids necessarily watching things that are going to be inculcating these habits of disrespect towards one's mother, but also one's father. And it's kind of an interesting thought that the kids are watching these cartoons and these commercials and these takes on fatherhood and the culture. And it almost can't help but filter down to the way that they treat their own dads. And so
it will have an effect, right? I mean, just because that's what they see it on popular culture. And so therefore, well, that's the way the kids on TV treat their fathers. And so that's the way they're going to do it as well. And as you said, like that, the term dad kind of, well, it is good because it is a familial term. And it just like in Our Father, you know, the term daddy is used as Abba, right? I mean, that's how we're supposed to approach God. The problem, though, as you say, is that it's been sort of degraded over time. And you were sort of kicking around the ball there with regards to why that possibly is. And you're maybe talking about I think you're saying the economic changes that have happened in the last century. I think Jim Stenson said it kind of best that, before you used to see fathers do manual labor, perhaps on a farm or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so therefore they would do their manual labor in front of full view of their kids and their family. So the kids and the family knew exactly what that man was doing to sacrifice for the family. Whereas I suppose now maybe because we're going to offices and a lot of men will do that and come home, and as men tend to do, you know, we'll sit down on the couch as soon as we get home after having completely exhausted our 20,000-word limit for that day. You can't talk anymore. You just want to sit there and do dolce far niente, do absolutely nothing. So and then you turn, like many of the men there, I talk to you, what do? When you get home, you turn on the Xbox and you play with your kids. And you're thinking, okay, well, it's great that you're playing with your kids. You're spending, well, quote-unquote family time with your kids because you're playing Xbox with them or whatever like that. But what are the kids seeing the father doing? And then sometimes the translation is, well, they're just like an older sibling, right? And so they're not really that authority figure that's there that I have to listen to. I play Xbox with my friends. I play, you know, whatever like this. And so therefore, I see this in societal culture that on cartoons that fathers are disrespected. Well, maybe that my dad is also just an older brother or an older sibling. And so therefore, my opinion counts just about as much as his does, right? Well,
that's
a role to, okay?
Well, I was just going to say that those are a couple of really interesting images. The idea that before the Industrial Revolution, the idea of the family farm, or all the members of the family were involved in the family business, if you will, whatever that may be, whether you're a carpenter or whether you're a farmer. But you did see your father working, and maybe people are seeing that a little bit more now in a strange way during the pandemic with the work from home movement. If you're, say, a teacher and you're teaching from home over Zoom or whatever the case may be, your kids are actually seeing you working for a change. But this concept of if they're not seeing you working, they're not sure what you do, but you're just like this older brother that plays with them. And that's a kind of a fascinating take. But I'm really interested in how we can get out of this and how we can reclaim a proper biblical Catholic view of fatherhood. So, Joe, really want to thank you for this call. Really appreciate that. Some really good takes there. We got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, but we'll be right back after this message. 1-888-914-9149. Want to hear your thoughts on this? Call in.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to The Cale Clark Show on this Thursday in the month of June, June 17th. Father's Day is coming up this weekend. What are you going to do for your dad? Tell him you love him. Give him a call. Give him a gift. Take him golfing. I hope that happens to me. Anyways, 1-888-914-9149. Speaking of golf, the U.S. Open starts today at Torrey Pines. Beautiful Torrey Pines out in San Diego, California, hugging the Pacific Ocean. I've actually played that course before. Anybody can play it. It's a public golf course. It's amazing. I love it. So we can maybe talk a little bit more about that later if we have time. Had the best burger of my life at Torrey Pines. This is totally unrelated to what we're talking about, but it was amazing. It was called the Drugstore Burger. Now, why is it called that? I'll share that with you if we have time. But we have far more important fish to fry here. We're talking about Father's Day. Really interesting piece in the Evening Standard UK by Ed Cumming about fatherhood, this whole derogatory term. You know, it's not derogatory. It's a neutral term, dad, but it's been used in a derogatory fashion in our culture. Dad jokes, dad bods, dad is not to be taken seriously. Ed Cumming talks about this, and just to finish off a couple thoughts that he had about this. We talked about some of the reasons in advertising that lead to this culture, at least in the media. Moms also, and by the way, if you're a mom out there, if you're a lady, even if you're not a mom, I want your take on this too from a woman's perspective, because one of the things he says as well is that the term mom can be overused as well and could become seen in the wrong light, because as dad has become kind of a goofball in the eyes of the culture, mom has attained superpowers. They're seen as industrious, inventive, loving, empathetic, intuitive, thrifty, good household budgeters. But sometimes they're also too domesticated. And moms are not as much of a force as they should be, let's say, in Fortune 500 boardrooms. And, you know, I was talking about this over dinner with my wife before the show. And one of the things that she said, which is, I think, a really interesting insight, is that part of this put down of dads in the culture may be an overreaction caused by, you know, women trying to get what's really fair for them. Equal pay for equal work, that sort of thing. And we need those things. But it's led to maybe a backlash against dads, an overreaction against them, if you will. So anyways, but there's a lot of bad takes on motherhood as well, on being a mom. Mom jeans. You know, we talk about dad bods. What about mom jeans? Well, they're not cool unless you're a skinny 19-year-old and not actually a mother. And then if you wear them, oh, yeah, then you're cool. Then you're fashionable. At any rate, a lot of the negotiation, the balance in the relationship between moms and dads and how they're viewed, the pandemic has brought a lot of this out into the open. It's exposed the fault lines because both partners are now at home pretty much all the time. And that's starting to end, of course, now. But a lot of men have had to see how the other half lives, if you will. What is life like away from the air-conditioned tranquility they enjoy at work? And Ed Cumming in the article quotes a female friend that he has who says, hey, this lady says, compared to trying to work around childcare, if you're a working mom and you're trying to deal with childcare at home and work at the same time, man, compared to trying to do that, the office is like a spa. It's like a day at the spa. The Fatherhood Institute actually says that men now think of themselves as better dads since the pandemic started, that 4 out of 5 dads would actually prefer to work more flexibly in the future, work more from home. And so, anyways, a lot of this has come out because of the pandemic. And I just want your take on this. Let's go to the phones right now. We're going to go to John, who's calling from, we have 4 guys named John, by the way, who are on the line. So I want to make sure they're not the same person. We've got John calling from Michigan. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Cale. Good to talk to you. One of the things that I see going on, I have 7 children. I have 3 mm-hmm. boys, 4 girls. There Congrats. Is a demasculinization of all men. And it's starting in elementary school with toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. Being told that masculinity is toxic. Our species, God created us where we complement each other. And mm-hmm. so in that complementary nature, there's a symbiosis. Some people will do some things better than others. Mm-hmm. Other people will be stronger at other things. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that that has to be a dividing factor. But that is what has taken place, is if you're not able to do everything that the opposite gender is able to do or better than they are to do, then you are the product of some sort of gender inequality. And so people are told that from a very early age now, and it, you know, I don't blame them for buying into it, because an excuse at a difficult life, I mean, people look for that in any capacity, but it just seems to me that men are under attack essentially for their masculinity. If you look on every TV program, if you look at sports athletes, if you look at actors, most of them are extremely effeminate.
I'm thinking about a lot of things as you're talking, and it's sort of related to your point too, John. And maybe when you're talking about schools and what's happening in schools, this whole idea of participation medals, everybody wins. It's somewhat related. There is no difference between somebody who's really good at something and somebody who's not. Well, if we do have, you know, actual winners and losers, it's good to be able to say that guy has a gift from God. He's got a talent for Absolutely. Athletics or whatever it may be. And I've got to acknowledge where that gift comes from. I don't just want to drag him down to where I'm at. If I'm a terrible basketball player, I shouldn't demand to be on the varsity team if I can't hit a 3-pointer or, you know. So we need to be able to admire the gifts of others and understand that we have our own too. Everybody has them. God's made us all unique and special. But I do think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. And part of it, again, this might be an overreaction to it. Let's face it, there has been a lot of toxic masculinity in the culture. The Me Too movement has brought a lot of that out. The terrible things that guys do, we should not treat women like this. And again, Jesus is the model of how to act as a man. He's our ultimate example. Say Joseph as well. But I do think that there is something to that. There's this move to move away from the uniqueness of what makes the feminine genius, as John Paul talked about with respect to women, and also the masculine genius as well. It's all part of God's plan and part of who we are. So I really like that call, John. Thank you very much. I appreciate that take.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for the call. We're going to go now to switch it up here. I want to hear from a lady, and Mary is on the line from Aurora, Illinois. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Kale.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
My pleasure. What you're saying is true. I've seen what the reputation of men, and particularly fathers, being dragged through the dirt. It makes me really mad because my dad was an awesome man. But I was listening to Sheila, who was filling in for Drew today,
okay.
And they were talking about the violence in Chicago, among other cities right now, and a lot of it goes back to the family. They're 80% of the families in Chicago, and I can't remember if it's troubled families or what, but 80% are one person households. They're all being raised by their mothers. So maybe a lot of people don't know what a father is supposed to be, what a dad is supposed to be. So I was thinking, well, think of St. Joseph. You know, if we go back to St. Joseph, he rescued his infant son from being slaughtered by the king. He walked his family to Egypt and back again. Our Lord Jesus, the Son of God, obeyed Joseph and respected him. So if you don't have a role model to look at Joseph. I guess that's what I want to say.
Yeah, and that's really well said, Mary. And I remember this was several years ago now, but a book came out called Fatherless America that talked about the lack of fatherhood in society. And I think the flip side of part of the reaction against, and this is something that producer Lucas said to me, part of the reaction against fatherhood, the denigration of dads, might also be due to negative experiences that people have had with their own fathers, either an absentee father or an abusive presence of a father, not a true mirror of fatherhood as well. So that may be part of it as well. And I thought that was really well said by Lucas. And so that's why some people even have real trouble relating to God. Don't tell me about God the Father. I don't want to hear it. Because my vision of fatherhood is not exactly positive. And this is why St. Paul says in the New Testament that all fatherhood gets its name from God. In other words, God is the model, not human. We should be looking at God as the ultimate view of fatherhood, and that's what we should be taking our cues from. And we see this reflected, of course, very well in the person of St. Joseph. So thanks for mentioning that. Obviously, it's the year of St. Joseph, and we consider him the head of Relevant Radio. We ask for his intercession all the time, and we need it. We absolutely need it. So thank you, Mary, for that call. Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
He's a good boss. Yeah, that's true. Thank you. That was Mary calling from Aurora, Illinois. And we're going to go now to Patty, who's calling from Chicago. And I see everybody on the line. Please, please hold on the line. I'm going to get to you. Patty is calling from Chicago. Hey, Patty.
Hi, Kale.
Hey, thanks for calling.
I was just calling in. Yeah, I was calling in to comment about TV shows, especially cartoons geared towards children. Mm-hmm. And there is a cartoon that we found that's kind of the opposite of the father portrayal in Peppa Pig. And it's called Bluey. And it's a family of healer dogs, and it's written and it's produced in Australia. It does air in the States. And the relationship between not only the father and the mother in the show, which is just heartwarming and realistic, it's also the relationship between the father and his 6-year-old and 4-year-old daughter dogs. And they, I mean, it's just, My husband and I watch the show, and we almost sometimes aspire to have the energy, the imagination, and the patience that Bandit, who's the dog, the dad on the show, has for his two daughters. So all is not lost out there for children, and there are shows out there, I feel, that still show what a loving father, who where the mother works and the father both works, but they both have time for their children. And so like that show, those shows do exist out there.
Patty, I'm so glad that you called. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because as you were talking, I could just imagine my wife, Trish, going, yes, you know, giving a big fist pump, because she is always talking about Bluey. She watches it with my daughter, Michaela, and they love it. And she's saying, Bluey's actually really positive for all the reasons that you mentioned. So, yeah, that's a great example. And, yeah, so there is some good stuff out there. And it's good to get that out there, to highlight that for people. There are alternatives. And we need that. We need examples of role models before our eyes. And also, it's funny that you mentioned this whole idea of, I want to aspire to be like these cartoon characters, because they're actually doing it right. Wherever we can get it, we need to take the inspiration. So Bluey, yeah, I've heard of it. I must confess, I haven't seen it yet myself, but I've heard so many good things about it from my wife and from my daughter Michaela. She loves it. So thanks for mentioning that, Patty.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. Thanks for calling in. Patty calling from Chicago. Now we're going to go to another guy named John. It's John Paul calling from New Jersey. Hey, John Paul.
Well, hello. Hello. And I love your programs, both of them.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You do have two, right?
I do. Yeah.
Back in the 60s, there was a book that really altered my course. It was by S.I. Hayakawa. And I think it was called Watch Your Language. No, it was another book, but it was S.I. Hayakawa. Mm-hmm. And he made the case that language shapes culture, not the other way around. Mm. So I've been many, many, many decades now studying English and its changes and so forth, all the vicissitudes of the English language. And there's one thing I became aware of maybe 20 years ago, and it began casually, and then it began in more in sports talk, and then it moved its way into everything. So I began to actually do recordings and actually do counts, word counts. Hmm. And I found that guy has replaced man almost 100% now.
The term guy has replaced the term man. Huh.
I've heard Jesus called a guy. I've heard Peter called a guy. I've heard every male saint called a guy. I've heard his people in history called a guy. And as much as I've heard Jesus called a guy, thank God I've never heard Mary called a gal. Hmm. And what I hear is, in the same sentence, a person might say a guy and a woman.
Okay.
Now, this is unconscious. This is unconscious. It's not meant to, in most cases, to be insulting. But once you catch it, once you become almost neurotic with it, it's like somebody mentioned a song every
once
time
you notice it.
I'm sorry I ever caught on to it. But the word guy has really all but replaced man. Now, how does this affect the society? Well, if S.I. Hayakawa was right, and I think he was, that language informs and shapes culture. Mm-hmm. I could see how there's a demeaning of man. He's not called a man. In the Bible, he's called a man. But in society, he's called a guy. I mean, I've noticed, now there are 11 guys on the field, or 9 guys on the field. There used to be 11 men.
Well, just playing,
that's how sports goes.
Yeah, and just John Paul, like, just to play devil's advocate here, what's so bad about using the term guy instead of man?
Because it's now eradicated man. It's like, I mean, I'll use guy because there are a lot of informal talks, that it just fits. It's informal. But it is so much eradicated the use of man to the point that it shows no respect anymore, even for the Lord. I mean, he's called a guy. I never would have thought I'd hear the Lord called a guy.
Yeah,
he's not a guy. He's true, not true guy and true God, true man.
Not true God and true guy. He's true God and true man, 100%. And he really exemplified what it means to be a man, John Paul. And like Joe, who called in earlier, said, you know, a man's supposed to be a servant leader, a provider, a protector, and a friend. And Jesus certainly is all those things and much more. So, yeah, thanks for that call, John Paul. That's really intriguing that you did that and looked into that study. And appreciate the call very much. That was John Paul calling from New Jersey. We got to take a really quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. 1-888-914-9149. You can call in. I still want to hear your best dad jokes. I got one on the line, but I need more. I want a good laugh. Call in. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester. Hey, welcome back to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're talking about Father's Day. We're talking about the view of dads in the culture. One thing that a lot of dads are going to want to do this Father's Day, this Sunday, is watch the final round of the U.S. Open Golf Championship from beautiful Torrey Pines in San Diego. And it's a course I've actually played. And the last time the U.S. Open was at Torrey Pines, of course, Tiger Woods famously won on a broken leg in an incredibly inspiring performance, had to nail a putt on the last hole of the last day just to get into a playoff with Rocco Mediate. You remember that guy? He was a journeyman player. He challenged Tiger, got into a playoff with him the next day on the Monday, an 18-hole playoff. He did lose, but he made a valiant effort, to be sure. And Patrick Alog was actually there.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. I was not there at the 18th hole, but I was there in the 15th hole. It was super crowded, but it was a great experience to be there. And during that 2008 U.S. Open, one of the top sporting events that I've been to. So it was a great experience. So you played the course. I walked the course.
I did.
All right, Lucas, come on now.
Yeah, Lucas has taken up golf. So maybe we'll all golf it together one day. That'd be fantastic. And we could make a contest out of it. You know, you could join our foursome. Well, speaking of the U.S. Open, let's get a leaderboard update, Patrick. What's going on?
Russell Henley, American, is in the lead by one stroke right now. Is a top 50 player, and then is one stroke ahead of Francesco Molinari from Italy and Rafael Cabrera Bello from Spain as well.
Okay, no. So,
but again, because it's in the West Coast, there's players who haven't teed off yet.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. It's prime time. Mm-hmm. It's going to be some primetime TV. So we didn't get to do this yesterday. We probably should have done it yesterday before the tournament started. So we're kind of cheating a little bit. But who is your pick to win the U.S. Open this year?
Bryson DeChambeau.
You're going to go with Bryson?
Yeah, okay. But again, he hasn't started yet. So maybe it'll turn out well for him. We'll see.
Well, I'm going to keep the Bryson DeChambeau feud with Brooks Koepka going here on this show because as golf fans know, these guys hate each other. And they should have paired them together. That would have been great TV. I'm going to go with Brooks.
Well, he's two behind right now. So good round. So we'll see how this goes. Maybe they'll be paired up in the weekend.
That would be fun. Yeah, well, they didn't want them together in the first round, but maybe they'll have to have it. And we'll see if they slug it out. Literally, these guys really don't like each other. But this is good for golf. It's such a fun rivalry. And Brooks is a little bit injured. It's not like winning on a broken leg like Tiger did in 2008. But you know, close enough. He's a two-time U.S. Open champion. It's going to be fun. Phil Mickelson's from San Diego. He might win. Get back-to-back majors. Xander Schauffele, a lot of people are picking him. He's from the area. Should be fun. I can't wait. And, of course, the trophy will be presented, unless there's a playoff, on Sunday on Father's Day. And speaking of Father's Day, we're going to go back to the phones right now. We're talking about Father's Day, the view of dads in the culture. And I did ask for some dad jokes, and we do want to provide you with a little levity to lighten your day, as Julie likes to say on the intro for this show. So John is calling from St. Charles, Illinois. Hey, John, what is your dad joke?
Hey. Okay, so a couple died at the drive-in theater here in Illinois. They froze to death.
Okay.
They went to see Closed for Season.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I like that, John. That was really well done. That was really well done. Closed for Season, yeah. When is this thing going to start? Okay. Good one, John. Hey, appreciate that. Appreciate the call. Call anytime. Oh, yeah. That was John giving us a nice chuckle there from St. Charles, Illinois. And now we're going to go to Queens, New York. We're going to go to the East Coast. Don is calling from Queens. Hey, Don, how are you?
Hi, Cal. I'm good. And you?
I'm well. I have to ask you, Don, are you a New York Islander fan?
I am. I'm watching them playing tonight.
you're having the time of your life now. The Isles are good. They are a good team. Yep. Might win the cup. Who knows? But I know that you didn't want to talk about hockey. So, Don, what is your take that you wanted to have on this?
My comment is that I think our kids learn from us and how we treated, how we spoke and interacted with our own parents.
Hmm.
That's my comment.
Yeah, it's so true. And kids pick up on these things. And I've been reading a lot of books on fatherhood. Obviously, my daughter's pretty young, but there's a guest who's been on Relevant Radio before, not on this program, but Dr. Meg Meeker. And she's written books on, she's a medical doctor, but she's written a book called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. And it's really eye-opening. It's really eye-opening. And some of the stuff that was in there shocked me. She talks about young girls who come into her clinic and the stuff that they're into. And she's like, look, parents really need to know about this. And it's really true that as they grow up, girls start to, when they start thinking about dating and they get to that age and thinking about marriage, they do tend to subconsciously even look for someone like their dad, the way that their dad treated their mom. It's so important. And the same is true, of course, for boys. And so boys should try to hopefully emulate their fathers in the way that they treated their mothers, hopefully in a very good way. And they tend to look for somebody like their mom in a lot of instances. So would you agree with that?
I would.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true. So role models are super, super important. So Don, thank you very much for the call. Enjoy the game.
Thanks, Kel.
Enjoy the Stanley Cup. There's Don calling from Queens, New York. Yeah, it's very important, and this is why we need great examples. We learn, as my friend Cardinal Collins likes to say, he says this all the time, and I quote him on this all the time, the Catholic faith isn't so much taught as it is caught. We catch it from role models. We imbibe it. We catch vestiges of it from those who have not only taught it to us, but hopefully lived it out in their own lives as a living epistle. As a living epistle. And St. Paul uses that image in his letters a lot. You are like that living letter. You know, I'm writing you a letter, but you are the letter. You are the message of Christ. And people are reading our lives all the time. And so it's necessary to prove faithful. And we need God's help for that. And he'll certainly provide it to us. Lucas, what do you think about this whole fatherhood thing? You're not a dad yet. But hopefully one day, we're praying for that.
No, I'm diligently taking notes over here. yeah, it's interesting hearing everybody's insights on this. Cale, you said something earlier during one of the phone conversations. I believe it was with Mary in Illinois. And she was talking about St. Joseph being a model of fatherhood. And you mentioned that Jesus is the true kind of model of manhood in a way or whatever. And I was just kind of curious if you could like elaborate more on that, like in what respects, like obviously he's God, so he's like perfect, but like, you know, I've never really thought about it in that way before. Like, how do I find my identity as a young man in who Jesus is, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. And the cool thing is that, you know, we can kind of identify with Jesus at different points in our lives. If you're a young student, like, wow, think about Jesus as a young man, you know, instructing the teachers in the temple. So we have to know our faith well, even when we're young, as best we can. And obviously, this is something that requires a lot more time than what we have left in the program. So maybe we'll pick up on this again next week, that Jesus can be hopefully spurring us on to a renaissance of what being a man is all about. And I think we see a lot of great qualities in Christ. And Joe talked about this, one of the callers who called earlier. Servant leadership, I think, was huge with Jesus. He didn't lord it over people. He demonstrated, this is how you lead. He washed feet. wrapped a towel around his waist and washed feet. He's willing to give up his life for his bride, the church, on the cross. So it's not a matter of authoritarianism, dictating, I want to get my way.
Yeah.
It's leading with love, and I think that's where I would start.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, sacrifice, servanthood, being the best person that you can be to help get your spouse to heaven.
Yeah,
I read a tweet the other day by Father Cassidy Stinson at Happy Priest on Twitter.
The Happy Priest.
And he said, you know, to be a good husband, or if you're in a marriage, to be a good spouse, put God first, and then to be a good parent, put your spouse first. And I thought that was a good point. Like, you know, have that kind of ordered hierarchy of God first, then your spouse, and then actually that's going to actually allow you to be a better parent towards your kids and your family and your siblings.
Yeah, and I think that's an overlooked element as well. Yeah, we've got to, before we can be a good spouse, a good parent, a good friend, we've got to be a good disciple. Remember, joy, Jesus first, others second, yourself last. But you got to love yourself too. Love God and love others as you love yourself. And I loved being with you guys today. It was the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Timmery's up next, followed by Father Rocky and the Family Rosary Across America. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.